And that one is on.
And it's running.
Okay. So, we're calling the meeting to order at about 5:35. Because we do a roll call, starting here to the right.
Tom DeFunis.
Roger Holland.
John Miller.
Brian Dolan.
Bill Brown.
Patricia Avery.
And Aaron Ammons. I guess we would have, before we even a motion to approve the agenda, I think we need to accept Patricia's offer to take minutes tonight in place of Ms. Jenny Putman. Mm-hmm. So I would motion that Ms. Avery be the secretary for this meeting this evening.
Second.
Second by Mr. Brown. All in favor?
Aye.
Ayes have it. So.
Who made the motion?
I did.
All right.
So I guess, and then we also have them. Has everyone had a chance to look at the agenda?
I move approval.
Moved by Mr. Holland.
Yes, sir.
Second by Mr. DeFonis. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? So ayes have it. The agenda has been approved. And the approval of the minutes from July 10th, 2009. I know Jenny was, she had surgery, had a couple things going on. She tried to get out a couple parts of it. So it doesn't look like Pius was able to print those out. So I don't know if everyone has had a chance to read those. I only had a chance to read parts of it, but I don't guess. So,
I got mine.
Oh, you do have
them? Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
It was in an email.
She sent them out.
In an email, so I didn't print mine.
Oh, okay. I couldn't open up the agenda, but I did get my minutes.
Okay. I didn't open the attachment, but I do have it somewhere.
I couldn't open the agenda.
I couldn't open the agenda, but I was able to get her minutes because she sent those later.
We don't have the minutes.
Should we just make a motion to defer the minutes until our next meeting? I'll make a motion to defer until our next meeting. Approval of the minutes of August 21st.
No, second.
Second by Mr. DeFonis. All in favor?
Say aye.
All opposed? Okay, ayes have it. Public participation. A guy who's usually always here never says anything, so I guess no public participation tonight. And so moving on to point number six, this is the discussion of the proposed new language for the questionnaire by Judge DeFonis. So does everyone have a copy of the new proposed questions? I think we passed them out
at the last meeting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't have a copy of them. Okay, Ms. Miller. You have another copy?
I might. What you should have is two things, one of which is marked in red at the top, which is current, which is what is currently used. The second one is marked at the top in red, revised. That is what is after changes that were recommended by the committee were added.
And so immediately what I noticed was that sort of some of the things that Ms. Putman was talking about was kind of making it a little more, I guess, reader-friendly and stuff like that. And I immediately noticed that all the questions are continuing on the front page. There was a breakup, the first three questions at first, and now basically that they are continuing on the front page. Has everybody had a chance to really look at this, or do we need to take a minute, maybe look at it some more?
Can we take a few minutes just to review it again?
Yeah, I think that would be good. That's a good idea. Okay. Thank you. Agenda and SAR. From the New York Times.
There is one correction that should be on the back of the revised on number 7 where it says partner occupation. That's my fault. It should be spouse/partner occupation. So I'll get the corrections under that. So I apologize. We wanted to include partner for some reason, and I, my communication to the person who needed to include the spouse partner.
I think that's a good addition.
Where is it at? I don't
see. Right here on number 7.
Number 7.
Partner occupation. He's just spouse, so we wanted to add partner, and for some reason my communication got fouled up, and they took out spouse and put partner only, so I wanted to make sure we had both things.
Okay.
Makes sense.
And the proposed changes were actually to question, so we've gone from 13 questions to 9?
Yeah, there are two on the back, which were, you know, were included in the current. So basically, there are some questions that were added about the ability to read and write the English language. Special accommodation due to disability. We did ask that, but it's in a slightly different spot. Physical and mental disability is a question now. We separate out whether someone has been convicted of a felony or misdemeanor. So it used to say criminal offense, which got people confused about whether a traffic was included or not included or what have you. So
and it also included close family members. So this
right.
The question now only involves the individual filling it out.
Mm-hmm.
I, if you recall what Mr. Thompson said a while back, he said, okay, I'll focus here.
Never too late on
that. We moved to defer them until next time, but you did great.
Yeah. Can I distribute these?
You
sure.
Better.
Yes.
You better.
Here, why don't we pass them down? Okay, these are stapled together, and this is our first page, second page. Okay. Okay, great. Thank you so much.
You. Well, I have a set. So, Barbara, we'll just pass it down. You have.
And for the record, I would, for the recording record, we do have where Mr. Randy Rosenbaum, Barbara Kessel, and Jennifer Putman, Ms. Jenny Putman, have made it to the meeting. So what we're discussing, you all, is the current and the revised editions of the questionnaire. And Mr. Holland was just sharing with us that there were two questions that were actually added to the questionnaire. So it appears on the surface that we've gone from 13 questions, or basically 16 questions. If you count the, I guess I shouldn't call the first 7 questions on the back. There was 8 through 13, so there were 6 questions that were on the back, and there were 3 questions that were on the front. We now have 9 questions on the front and 2 on the back.
And the only question that contains the language about a close family member is the victim of crime question, which is number 9 on the back side. That is something that Mr. Rosenbaum and Judge Jafonis can attest to that. And again, that is obviously an issue that would be important to know during jury selection. But other than that, that particular kind of language has been removed.
Well, certainly I appreciate Mr. Rosenbaum being here, and I know the Judge DeFantis was once a prosecutor. He's now serving in the position of a judge. It's a little bit different position, and we don't have the pleasure of having a prosecutor here to make sure that both sides are being heard and being represented. Mr. Rosenbaum, have you had a chance to relook at these revised proposals?
Yes.
And so this issue that Mr. Holland is talking about a family victim, could you share some light on that for me, please?
Well, I think in the original form, it lists, have you or a close family member been convicted of a crime, are on probation, parole, or been a victim of a crime. And I guess the new one, the only language for a close family member is a victim of a crime. It doesn't say, has a close family member been convicted of probation, parole. You know, I think a lawyer can ask that question to the jury anyway. But in my experience, I'd say if the answer is yes, probably 95% of the time it's that person. I guess sometimes it is, you know, a spouse or something like that. But, you know, I don't have any strong feelings either way. I think a lawyer can always ask it. So whether it's on this form or not, I don't think it breaks it or not. But.
Okay. Judge? Go ahead.
Dan, the reason I wanted to keep in, have you or a close family member been the victim of a crime? And I think Randy can attest to this. If we're trying a case involving sexual assault, murder, some crime of violence, I know we were involved in jury selection on Granville Johnson, and I believe on one panel I had 3 prospective jurors that answered yes, and all three of them had family members who had been murdered. So obviously I excused them, and I didn't make Randy use a challenge for cause, but I do think it's important that we know whether or not them or an immediate family, because it's going to affect their ability to be fair and impartial, especially if it's the same type of case.
All right.
So that's the reason I left that in there. But again, like Mr. Thompson said, you give me this questionnaire and I'll fill it out and I'll tell you that I've been convicted of offenses. You give that same questionnaire to my mother, that's going to bother her. And again, this conference I went to, I shared that comment that he made with the judges up there. They all nodded their head and understood exactly what he was saying. That they said, you put that gentleman's mother in the jury box, she's going to have to answer that question in front of this courtroom full of people. So again, I think Randy said they can ask that question about other family members, but I think it's appropriate that we only ask the individual who's sitting there.
Does everybody understand what he's saying?
No.
Okay. I thought not.
The old question used to be, have you or a close family member currently charged with committing any criminal offense? If you or a close family member have ever been convicted of a criminal offense, are you or a close family member on probation or parole? We've deleted family member. We're only asking the question of the individual who's filling this out.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully that will make it we may get more responses.
I believe that it will, and especially, you know, if we're trying to be more inclusive, because 9 times out of 10, for the most part, you're probably going to find very few African American families who don't have any family members who have come in contact with or have been convicted of some crime, and that's just the fact. And in filling this out, I was just listening to a group of individuals talk on the radio yesterday, and they were talking about a group of guys just sitting around talking, and some of these guys, most of these men are very professional African-American men, but all of their stories were the same, that they've all spent some time in jail, and they are now, they're very active in their communities. They give back to their communities. They all have good, you know, jobs and everything. But have they been convicted? Yes. Is there anyone in their family that's probably been convicted? Yes. And that's just a fact. And that's a sad truth. When you think about how many African Americans are imprisoned, it's hard to find families that are not been touched by the penal system. When you have over 2 million folks in our prison system, and over 1 million of them are African American, it's very difficult when you make up. So I appreciate the fact that that question has been taken out. So thank you very much, because people look at that and there's no sense in me filling this out because they're not going to call me anyway. So people will look at that and based upon that question, determine that I'm not going to get called. Because if I have to answer that question, yes, I have had someone in my family. And if they think that that's a reason for them not to get called, that would lower your response rate. So I appreciate that it's not there. But I do have a question in that, if you do have a family member that was convicted and you're not, that doesn't keep you from serving?
No.
No. Okay.
No, not at all.
No, okay.
Bill, you got a question?
Yeah, I think one thing that's more confusing about the new form is that questions 4 through 9 really don't have anything to do with qualifications. If they're under the qualification section.
Well, I looked at that also, and there is a little spot there that says if you answer yes to all of these questions, then complete the remainder of the form. And I think that could be somewhat misleading because it is under the bold header of qualifications, which actually brings me to a conversation I think we should have before we dig any deeper into this. Because the actual proposal, I think, Judge, when you were absent at one of the meetings, many of us were actually pretty much a consensus to not have any of the other questions, only the three qualifying questions. So I thought it was, you know, maybe a bit contentious, but I do think it's something that we should discuss before we even spend a whole bunch of time hashing out this piece. Let's at least discuss this whole notion of only having the three qualifications. This is why I really thought it was going to be good to have a prosecutor and a defense attorney here, because I understand some of the reasoning behind it, but I think if people were a little bit clearer about what it really means, if the only qualifications are these first three, then if we could have a real clear understanding of why we have these other questions, and is there any openness to having just three questions and see what that does. I think that was the suggestion also of Ms. Hannaford. So if either of you all want to try to kind of...
Are you suggesting that on this form that goes to people only have the three questions, but then when they show up for jury duty on that first Monday, fill out a form with the remaining information that would then be distributed to the lawyers?
That was one of the proposals.
Never asking that question.
No. I believe the proposal that was offered was that the three questions would be here on the questionnaire. And then once they return the summons and everything, when they are in that sort of holding period, that waiting period downstairs, then they get the rest of this information and have that information then turned over to the attorneys so that they can have it to look at. Yes, sir.
I want to ask a question of Roger. The way we... The period of time from when the jurors come in on Monday morning to the time that we have a list ready for the given courtrooms, is there time for our jury people to get this filled out?
I think it would be difficult, not impossible. A bigger question for me is, the questionnaires are not just pieces of paper that get scanned into your computer system. They're not just pictures, okay? When you mark an X in one of these boxes, it triggers certain parts of the computer program. So I'm not sure if our computer program, and this is something I would have to ask the developer, would even allow for a secondary form to be used. Because this form, and one of the reasons why it was so difficult to change, is very, very specific. You have to tell the computer exactly where to look on exactly what form to look for what mark. And I'm not saying it's impossible, but I don't know of any other place that has the three questions initially and then another sort of questionnaire when the people actually arrive. The places that use this software, to best of my knowledge, all use a two-part system, meaning the questionnaire has all the questions, and the summons lets you know when their jury duty is to begin and where they're reporting that sort of information. So I can look into that, be happy to look into that, but I'm not even sure if it's possible, short of some sort of very expensive tailoring of the computer system, to even make it so that we could do it in two pieces. Does that make any sense?
I think it makes sense, but it's a little convoluted because of the computer, the whole technological aspect of it kind of
correct.
Joan had a question first, and then Barbara.
The question about the special accommodations due to a disability, I think you would need to know that in advance. I mean, don't those people get special parking if they need it?
Could be special parking. I personally sat with a visually impaired person and was with them during the time when they served in jury service. Hearing impaired people, we provide sign language interpreters if they're able to sign. So yeah, it's very important that we get as much advance notice as possible, especially when we have to call in people to help us make sure that they get the access that they need. In addition, sometimes just the physical layout, making sure there are core security to where we have someone who may be is in a wheelchair or in a walker, it may take them longer to get from place to place. We want to make sure that they have access to the ramp to get from where they need to go. So, yeah, it's very important that we get as much advance notice as possible about those sorts of things.
I mean, that, I think that's a very valid point, and that's why we're hashing this out, because maybe there's possible to just only have something like that on there. And so I guess basically what we're asking everybody to do right now is to consider this option and what it would take to make this option happen. And if that doesn't work, then so be it. But let's try thought-wise just to see what it would take to make it happen. So I appreciate the comments about the software, because a lot of us don't, I don't think, understand the whole software notion of how that works. And Barbara, you had a question around that?
I missed last time, and so I didn't get to hear what Ms. Hannaford said, and I'm just reading the minutes right now. And apparently, if I understand this, she's saying that it's possible to even skip that whole first step of the questionnaire and just send people a summons.
Well, we did that for years.
And then in that case, what happens to these questions? That's my question.
We didn't use this computer system when we had the one-step process, okay? When this computer system was brought on board, we went to the two-step process, okay? I don't know what would be involved with that. I mean, I'm guessing it would be a very simplified version. But again, then you're sending out, potentially sending out more summonses to get the same number of people. Now, one thing that Ms. Hannaford-Agger did say, which was very interesting and enlightening to me, is that we may actually be getting very comparable results with the two-step versus the one-step process. And that's something I think we ought to seriously consider. If we're not getting any better results,
right,
then I don't know what the purpose of having a two-step process is. Other than, we have a much better notion that the people that we're sending the summons to are qualified when we do send them a summons. And we can much more count on those numbers coming in as qualified people. When you send out just the one step with the summons, we don't know if they would have checked one of these boxes that said they're not 18, they're not a citizen, they're not a resident. We won't know that. And so that may disqualify more people that wouldn't have had to even show up had they gotten an opportunity to say this. We would have had an opportunity to address any kind of individuals that would have special needs that we could take care of for them. This also gives people the opportunity to mark on there what they could serve. If they can't serve immediately, what's a good time for them to serve? So whether or not you get to the issue of the actual questions, all of that information is good to have in advance. Now, is that worth the postage and the sending out in two-phase? That's a whole other question. And even a bigger question to me is, we have the ability, but unfortunately not the fiscal wherewithal at the moment, to make the system even simpler. Because there is a portion of software we could add to this that would allow people to either go on a website and fill this out without any postage.
Oh,
or call in a phone number and go through, hit number one if this is true, two if this is true, three if this is true. Unfortunately, those are add-on features to the software that would cost tens of thousands of dollars to actually get.
But it would be cheaper to go back to the old system if it doesn't produce more responses to have two steps.
Well, we would still have to, right now, every two, in the old system, we would send out somewhere between around 500 summonses to get 125 people to show up for a two-week term.
Right.
Okay? So, that's a lot of postage more than what we're sending out now. Because now, as far as the summons goes, but we're sending out two phases. Plus, each of those envelopes has a self-addressed stamped envelope in it, which, of course, we can't recoup if they never send anything back. Obviously, if they come back with a bad address, we take those self-addressed stamped envelopes out of there and reuse them. So it's not just there is a cost, but it's very confusing to see exactly what would be better financially to do. My own personal feeling is, at least, I like things simple. So a one tier system is great, but if we're going to have calling a lot of people who can't serve anyway and end up inconveniencing them, if we don't get advance notice of special needs, if we don't have information that could give us an idea that these people aren't qualified for whatever reason, then that's a downside to going to one.
Right. When we had the one letter system, which is what the summons, didn't say your jury duty starts October 4th, but if you need to excuse, if you're unqualified or you can't serve, come to the jury commission before that date. They give
correct.
The date. So there was always an out for people who weren't qualified to get out before that
date. And there still is.
Right.
And there still is. Because the jury commission still meets once a month, and people have an opportunity to go before them and explain. Well, if they
but you wouldn't necessarily be getting people showing up for actual jury duty and saying, I'm not qualified. They hopefully would have gone to the jury commission before they had gotten out of it.
Well, that's right. Or, but that still requires them to take another affirmative step. And they could have possibly just checked the box and been done with it in the process. So,
thank you.
Judge, finally said a comment. Bill, did you have your hand up also?
I'll wait.
No, go ahead.
Well, I think if he... We're just looking for a technical way to have them do those questions later. One option might be to have the computer print out the exact same form with their answers filled in, and then they just finish it up when they got there, and then you could rescan it and go through.
Yeah, I'm not sure whether how the scanner allows for duplicate scanning. Again, it's something that I didn't design the software, so I'm not sure exactly what that would do, whether that would constitute another entry or what have you. I honestly don't know. The only thing that these people have to do when they come back in is that the summons, which I don't have a copy of here, but I've shown you before, has their juror badge in the corner of it, and that gets scanned with a barcode reader, similar to the ones you see at the grocery store or the department store.
So you're saying maybe next week, next couple of weeks, next meeting, you can have that information about the scan?
I can certainly, yes, contact our folks in Texas and find out. Tyler Todd, I believe it's Tyler, Texas, is where Judicial Systems is based out of, and I can kind of try to contact their person, Gary Dower, and see if he can give me the information. I'm sure he can.
Okay.
Good. Is it D-A-U-E-R?
I think it's D-O-W-E-R, but let me double check and make sure. I think I have it somewhere.
Hey, Judge. I'm sorry, I thought you were done.
Okay. Go ahead, I'm done.
We're looking to, one, is try to make this form more user-friendly.
D-O-W-E-R.
Have you ever been involved in an automobile accident? Who hasn't?
Right.
Do we really need that on here?
No.
I don't think we need that. I would just as soon have that deleted. One of the suggestions that I would make, and again, if our computer can do it, in a way that the committee thinks would be, again, a better way to get responses, that's fine. But if we have a problem with that, I would make a suggestion that we at least try to use this version that we have here with any other changes that you think appropriate, and see if we get a better percentage of responses. Now, we don't know who's responding, but we have a history and we know what our response is for sending these questionnaires out. If we come to an agreement on the questions that we send out, and we see a percentage increase in the number of people that are sending them back in, we may have addressed the problem. Mm-hmm. If we're seeing the same percentage that we're not getting the response back, then I think we need to look at something else.
Okay. I don't know who went in first.
Go
I just saw a couple of
okay. Well, my initial concern about questions 7, have you been convicted of a felony misdemeanor, probation, parole, party to a lawsuit, and automobile accident, and close family member, is that they all imply to someone who isn't real knowledgeable that if you answer yes, you aren't qualified. And that's not true. It's very specific to the case. So, for instance, have you or a close family member been a victim of a crime? I have a sister who was kidnapped, and I know because of talking to people about it that I've never been on a jury, but if I was called to a jury, I of course couldn't be on one that had to do with a kidnapping case. But there's lots of other cases that I would be qualified for. So what if I didn't know that and I said, oh, I have a close family member who's been a victim of crime, I just won't even bother to send this back in.
Well,
so that's
what,
the problem with
just
it.
Just a second, Ron. Okay, wait, just a second, Ron. I just wanted to clarify. Are you making this point to further the discussion about having about having no questions.
Oh, less but, questions. These, less. I think that the ones about accommodations for a disability, the ones they've added are perfectly reasonable.
No, what I'm getting at is Judge just made, a proposal to try this new, let's come to an agreement on the new form. Try it for X amount of time. What we did not hear is how long we would try it, and then maybe come back to your proposal. I want to make sure I'm clear about that to make sure everybody else is clear.
I have a suggestion too that might help with this, but go ahead.
Okay, all right. So, Barb, if you could finish your point.
Yeah, my suggestion is that if we're going to, I like the idea of trying something to see if it produces more results, because if it doesn't, we're wasting our time, and we need to try something else. I think that's excellent. Okay. What I'm saying is that what we ought to try should be a little more different than this, which is still just tinkering with what we had before.
Okay.
And that if we want to really try that approach, we should eliminate 7, 8, 9, and then on the next page, 8 and 9. You were proposing to eliminate the automobile accident, and I say, let's add to that those others. Try it and see if that produces more effect, and if not, let's do something.
So Barb, I just want to make sure I have this. Barb, your proposal is to move 7, 8, 9 off the back and 8, 9 off the front. Is that what you just said?
Uh-huh. Okay. Well, I guess it's 8, 9 is the back. I'm fine.
It's single sided.
Okay.
Now, I don't know whose hand I was first over here, so go ahead, Judge.
I think you're absolutely correct when you say that someone's going to look at this and say, well, if I'm checking yes, that means I don't qualify to be a juror, in that one way that we can address that problem is I provided at the last meeting a potential letter to send out with the questionnaire.
Yes, I saw that.
Now, if we explain, if we add to this letter another couple of lines that explains just because you answer, well, with the exception of are you party with lawsuit, that gets you out. But explaining.
It does. I didn't know that.
Well, yes. If you're party to a lawsuit, you're excused from
then
service.
That should be there.
But I mean, if we were to explain in the proposed letter, dear prospective juror, what answering 4 through whatever number we end up with means, it just provides information for a specific jury that it doesn't disqualify you from being a juror. Mm-hmm. I mean, I would want to leave that, if we could do that, I would leave that up to the committee to decide how you wanted to phrase that.
As an add-on to that, my recommendation was going to be to put that right ahead of those questions. In other words, one sentence, no matter something to this effect, no matter how you respond to these questions, you know, your responses to these questions will not, underline not, disqualify you from jury service. Maybe that, in conjunction with what Judge DeFantis has recommended about the outgoing letter, if we do both things, that way there should be no reason. And that would be a relatively simple thing to add, a one-sentence thing. No matter how you answer questions, however we number them, 4 through 10.
I think you have to start the numbers over because they aren't qualifications anymore.
Well, either way, whatever you want to say. No matter how you answer questions 4 through 10, does not disqualify you from jury service.
Did somebody else have a hand up? Ms. Avery, and then Randy.
Well, I think Barbara was saying pretty much the same thing I was saying earlier about the qualification for answering those questions. We had to answer those questions if I looked at that, it would say, oh, no, then I don't qualify because I have had somebody that has gone to jail. But that's where it gets a little confusing. I guess what I was thinking you were saying, Judge, is that you wanted us to modify this version of the form and then put it out there for a test to see what it is. So when Barbara was making her comments about just removing those, that's what I thought that we were discussing, the possibility of modifying this revised version and then sending out that version for a test to see if we got a better result. And so I'm with Barbara. I thought that's what we were doing, is going through saying, okay, let's talk about questions 7 through 9. Can we remove those from our form?
So I just wanted to make sure that we were clear then, I guess, as a committee, that we were tabling the discussion of complete removal of all questions other than the first three for now, and only entering now into the discussion about making sure that this that the question, the new proposed questionnaire was, we had an agreement on that. That so I think everybody's clear on that. The proposal that was the initial proposal that we began to discuss was that we only wanted three questions on a questionnaire, period. Only the ones that were qualifying. And what we have agreed on, I think, is to not enter that discussion right now. Only into the discussion about the revised,
modifying the revised
one. So just make sure that we all moved on to that page.
I haven't consented to that yet.
Okay.
Randy got a big issue.
Okay.
Yeah, I understand what everybody's saying. I think writing it in a letter that explains these other questions are not qualifications, or putting a sentence after question three saying that the information would be used by the court to determine whether you may be appropriate for a particular case, or whatever you want. I think any of those are fine. Or you could just put another heading, Section A qualification, Section B. I don't care how you want to do it. Any of those things are fine as long as you that you understand. Judge DePonta suggested taking off the automobile accident. I suggest taking off the probation and parole one, and the reason why is because if you're asking, have you ever been convicted of a felony, and they say yes, well, of course, the follow-up is going to be, what was it, when was it, and we know if they're on probation parole. So I think it's kind of redundant to ask if they're on probation parole.
Okay.
So that's eliminating the question.
Okay. If we want to, Brian and then Matt.
I just wanted to clarify for a couple people who weren't there last week with the discussion with Ms. Hannaford. As I understood it, anybody else can correct me if I'm misrepresenting her position on the issue of whether sending out the one-step or the two-step process was better. And she said that in her experience as the national expert, that in the one-step process, it goes out once, and there's less of a chance for some change of address. When you send it out twice, there's a chance for some change of address, because poor people and disproportionately African Americans are those who are the poorest in this country, that the two-step process incorporates this element of people moving around and changing address, and therefore it's harder to keep up with them than just sending. And what she seemed to be suggesting was the best proven scenario was that it's a one-step process. There's a summons sent out, and if people didn't reply to the summons, there was a follow-up, as she called it. And we would have to clarify exactly what the follow-up was. But she said you did not have to send out the sheriff with a warrant to arrest him, that you could send out a strong letter insisting that they show up. And she said that usually upon that follow-up, people would respond quickly. And that's, as I understand, her analysis of the benefits or drawbacks to the one- or two-step.
I remember that same statement.
She did say that. I agree.
Yeah, it's in the minutes.
And I noted that she felt that a one-step process was more efficient.
My question would be, I mean, if the concern is transient community because of a two-step process, even the follow-up is still a two-step process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you're following up saying, hey, we need you, it's still, I mean, they could have moved in between that time. So the question would be, how long is it in between,
She gave a period of 3 to 4 weeks after you don't hear anything.
It was 3 weeks?
3 weeks.
Okay.
After the first one. Uh-huh. And it said it yielded an increase in about 24 to 46%.
Yeah.
It's significant.
And I would just like to reiterate that we have the two-step system been on the books now for maybe 2 years. And just in the court-watching study, although it is unscientific, I agree, the numbers that's produced have not shown any real variance in the last 4 or 5 years that it's been done. It has not shown any difference that the real significance of more minority participation in juries during this process. So we already have tried this two-step process, and there has, according to this one study, been no real sizable improvement in particularly after the jury.
Okay. Matt was first.
The biographical section, the first few parts of it, um,
number of children, why is that necessary?
Where is that?
Is that necessary to be on the question?
Where is that?
So number two on the...
I don't know about children. It's number two on the biographical. Oh. That is kind of silly.
I think sometimes in criminal cases, if you have child victims or you know, this and that, you know, sometimes you want to know if they have children because you may have a different view of life. And so it's helpful from the defense perspective. I don't know about the prosecution.
Can you just say yes or no?
Yeah, I
got 10.
Do we have children, yes or no? I don't think the numbers necessarily help.
Yeah.
And on marital status, why are we wanting to know marital status?
Isn't that because we are influenced by our life partners? And if the case involves somebody who's been poisoned by an agricultural pesticide and I'm married to a farmer, then I might have a hard time being a fair juror in such a case. That when I say, yeah, I'm married to a farmer, and I thought that's why those questions were asked, because it gives the lawyers insight into the makeup of the individual they're considering in the family.
Those in the
court
services agree.
I think that's true. I mean, if you have a woman who says she's a teacher, you may know Cal Taker, but oh, the husband is a lawyer, and I know that lawyer. I want that person. Or whatever, they're a doctor. This is the medical issue going on there. So I think the spouse's occupation is relevant.
Yes. I understand that. This thing runs the gamut, though. This runs everything from being married to being single, widowed, separated, divorced. So what if someone chose that they put down that they're widowed or separated or divorced? What does that glean? What do you glean from that? Is there a follow-up on that if they make it into the jury box? Question box? Or
usually not.
Okay, then why? Yeah. Well, yes, just for now.
When you were answering his question?
Yes.
Okay.
I honestly don't think I've ever seen anyone ask a question on marital status in the dozens of years I've been doing this. Mm. That's an interesting... I mean,
interesting question.
And I honestly don't... I guess it doesn't provide any information that the parties seem would be useful.
Yeah. That's my theory, is that if it does provide useful information, well, first of all, if it doesn't provide useful information, we need to have that on there. Secondly, if it does provide useful information for the reasons that have been put forth, you're missing some people to fly under the radar who have some public life partners that they may have been life partners for 20, 25 years or what have you, could just be just as influential as married partner, but you're not getting anything about that in here.
As long as we keep questions 6 and 7 about partner's occupation, then we probably wouldn't need the ones about.
Well,
just
the
same partner and check that. I mean, that would be fine too.
Others should be put in here because right now, like if you're not married, but you have a partner for 10 years, you put your only option in number 4 is put single. So then. That might seem kind of odd, though, to fill in number 7.
Well, why do we?
I think we need to add another or whatever, or take that question out.
I say take it out, but I'm...
Good. That'd be great.
Just a quick question. What happens if they leave some of these blank?
They do. A lot of them do.
And does it still go through and they still get summoned and then...
So they can ask
the lawyers just have a blank there when they come to that?
Yeah, I mean, the lawyers get a copy of this document so they can say, I don't see that you've marked an answer to question whatever, and then ask the question if it's somehow relevant to their voir dire process, if they're questioning the jury, potential jurors.
I want to bring us back to, because I wanted us to first really put to bed the whole notion, and I think the point that Brian brings back up from a scientific perspective with Ms. Hannaford is really needs to be explored about the one tier process. And I believe the other component to that is that the overall implication that seems to be present is that, and I think maybe Judge even said this, that all of these other questions are really just to make the jobs a little more precise, or maybe even, I would dare say, a little bit easier for the prosecutors and defense attorneys, because you have this information and they've already marked it. You don't have to ask it when they get in the box.
Did you get it?
Yes.
Yay.
Oh, wonderful.
You remind me of the president. He's been after that fly.
So, the point that I'm making here goes back to the one that Ms. Avery and Barbara Kessel was making, is that those of us who are familiar with the system understand when a statement is made, this doesn't necessarily disqualify you. But as a person with a felony conviction, which I have issue with that one on the other side, when I fill out a job application and they say it doesn't necessarily bar me from it, I say that's not true. So my feeling is that I'm going to be disqualified based upon that if I mark that. So I believe that overall the feelings of individuals who are not familiar with the system unless they're in the system is that if you ask me any of these questions that are uncomfortable, I'm going to conclude that you're asking me this to remove me, to disqualify me. That's going to be my conclusion from it based upon my experiences. So that's why I'm far more supportive of just give me the three that really are qualified and let the folks that make their big money earn their big money. You know, I'm just lighten the load a little bit for some of us, right?
But I don't know whether that answering it in the privacy of your own home and sending it back is somehow, I would seem to think that would be preferable to answering that question in the middle of a courtroom in front of a bunch of other people.
No, what I'm saying is that I have a desire to serve. Like, I want this job. But I know when you ask me this question that it has a negative stigma to it when I mark I have a felony conviction because of the way it is in society. So I know that in my heart, I don't really want to fill this out. I feel like I'm not going to be accepted. So if I don't really want that job, then I just say forget that application. I'll move on to one that asks me something a little less intrusive, right? So for me, you want to serve on this jury, mm-hmm. and you ask me this question. Some people who don't want to serve really, or who have some, did I catch you?
No, okay. Right.
No, I have a spider.
I
got a spider.
I just think that there's something to be said and explored about the whole. Just if I have just the qualifying questions that are not intrusive at all, U.S. citizen, 18, do you live in the area? That says okay. It makes me feel like I'm okay. I can be a part of this. And if I come, and I think some of the other questions about certain vision impaired and all those different things should certainly be a part of it. But I'm a little more supportive, I believe, of the one-tier process, only asking the questions that are mandatory questions, basically, or those that are going to be very helpful as far as the vision impaired and stuff like that, move to the other ones.
There won't be any questions, though. If you have just a one-tier system, there are no questions.
You just send a jury summons.
You just get a thing saying, you please appear on this date at this time, which my point was, and I completely understand what you're saying, and I'm not disagreeing with it, but I'm wondering whether or not someone would rather mark a box on here in the privacy of their own home or wherever they may happen to be when they're filling it out, as opposed to getting that question asked in open court in front of however many other potential jurors. I don't know the answer to that question.
Mm-hmm.
They may get asked about it anyway if they marked yes anyway. But my point is,
but you're saying it's less likely that they'll get asked one some of these intrusive questions if they've already answered them.
It might be. And you know, we don't want to embarrass people. Mm-hmm. Clearly,
Matt.
This may not sound good, but if we're trying to get the response rate up, if we're trying to get more warm bodies to come to the courthouse to do jury service, I mean, is that worth then having to ask them in open court? You know, I mean, I can understand Aaron's point definitely, and I can see why. Yeah, they'd be in the privacy of their own home answering this, but they might also think like Aaron thought, like, shoot, they don't, you know, they're not going to want me because so you know.
Oh, I'm not disagreeing.
Yeah, maybe asking this in open court might, you know, once you get them there, you know. That might be better. I guess my question is, I'm just curious whether you ask them over court or whether you ask them. Do we follow up on this? Like, if someone were to lie and say no, I'm not, had a felony conviction, and Would we ever find that out? Do we check
yeah,
on that?
Yeah,
their names. They're under penalty of perjury.
Well, yeah, I mean, that pop up.
Judge, go
The state, if they once they get the jury list, and anybody can get the jury list, they can run the criminal history of the people. So, so what you'll see, and Randy can agree with this, asking a potential juror, have you ever been convicted of an offense? They say no. And you're looking at somebody who's got the exact same date of birth, the exact same identifiers, who has four prior felony convictions. They'll use a challenge to excuse that person. Do we follow up? No.
That's right.
It's, again, that. I just think it would be a waste of time. But the question, if the answer is inappropriate, and the state knows it, they'll use one of their peremptory challenges. Oh, I still have the floor. Can I make a suggestion?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Let's delete. Have you ever been convicted? Let's delete. Are you on probation or parole?
Mm-hmm.
Let's delete. Automobile accident.
Mm-hmm.
Let's add partner, spouse, occupation. Let's delete marital status, that whole line, like mm-hmm. I said. Let's add children, yes or no. Put together, if we can agree on something like that, then, okay, let me have 3 months of sending that out.
Okay.
Or whatever period of time you think. And let's see what kind of response we get.
I like that.
I like it.
Here's the one thing we have to be careful about, too, and this is probably a priority issue. If we go and try to do several things at once to try to increase the response, we want to make sure we know which one is giving us the response. So we're going to have to tailor whatever follow-up, if we ask a question, if we provide them with a survey. Did you hear our ads on X radio station? Did you, we're going to want to know.
I like the survey.
What's actually working.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing, and in that way, we can ask what is working. We really can't send a questionnaire to people who don't respond. I mean, they're not going to respond to the questionnaire. They're not going to probably respond to a survey. I passed out a letter that Judge DeFantis drafted on follow-up. So that's something that we've promised.
Oh, this is the follow-up.
Yeah, there are two letters.
Great.
One that goes
great.
Out with the initial
mm-hmm.
questionnaire,
okay.
One that will go out with the follow-up.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Randy has his hand up.
Yes, Randy.
This is a little tangential, but we've been talking a little bit about one letter with the summons versus the two tier. The Randall Johnson trial, I just did the third one, I was sitting there during jury selection, and I was noticing we had about 40 jurors there. And out of the 40, I was just flipping through, and I noticed that only maybe two of them had put August as the preferred month. So I'm thinking maybe we're having people come on months when it's not convenient for them, because we're only two that marked August. And then I thought, and then I just happened to glance and saw that that person filled this out in 2007. So I started glancing through all these, and I would say probably 30 of the 40 were from 2007. There was one from 2006. There were a bunch, maybe five or six from 2008. So I just thought I'd raise that issue because I don't know if this is typical, if it was atypical or what, but there was a very lengthy delay between sending this out and then getting them summoned in, and so the convenience meant nothing because this was convenience back in 2007. So that's one potential problem with the two-tier is people move, but you're also, for some reason, have this delay. Now, again, this may have been unusual. I don't know. We can check with the trials coming up this
wow.
week. But
it could simply be that, when these people come back, I recently, probably a month or so or 2 months ago, got a questionnaire and threw it away. No, I'm just teasing. I filled it out and submitted it. Now, when I get called for jury duty or get summons, could be next month, could be 2 months, could be a long time, because it is, again, completely random. So once you're in the pool, and if you haven't been on a trial, you remain in the pool, because we want to keep you around for as long as we can. If you're a live person who's qualified, we want you... Try to hit me.
Oh, I don't want to look.
Just can't get that gavel out of that
one. Anyway.
No.
I think it's basically a function of the randomness of getting pulled. Now, obviously, the older that this is, people's life experiences do change. So, obviously, the older it is, the more likely it is that someone's circumstances are changed. But by the same token, if someone's a farmer, the winter months are going to be better for them regardless. Or if they're a teacher, the summer months are going to be better for them. So,
basically, once you get in this, after you return that questionnaire, you're going to be in the system indefinitely. So there, it's not, it happens often. It's not something that's just...
Right. Then if your circumstances have changed, you can go to the jury commission and let them know. And they can then say, okay, your circumstances have changed. We can set you over. We can excuse you. We can take care of your issue. Or you can contact the jury personnel and they can take care of it as well.
Bob, question. What you raised a question in my mind as to whether or not sending out the revised questionnaire for 3 months will show us results. If it takes years for the people who answer the questionnaire to get into the...
What it will show us, we know what our percentage of return is on the questionnaire. So if we send out a revised questionnaire and our percentage goes up in the people that are returning it, again, we don't know who they are. We don't know the racial makeup. But if our percentage goes up, then I think we're on the right track. If we send out, however we come up with a determination on this questionnaire, if we send it out and after 3 or 4 or 5 months, we're still looking at the same numbers, then maybe we look at what Ms. Hannaford has said. I don't think we need to. Whatever is agreed to is something that we will keep doing forever if it doesn't work.
So, Roger, you are, this question is this follow-up, though. This would only, I guess, be in the case of the one-tier system?
Two-tier.
Two-tier.
Only in the case of a two-tiered system.
Oh, right.
If someone doesn't respond to their questionnaire, we would send them out another questionnaire with this letter, which, as you guys can all read, so I don't need to go through it, but basically says it's important for you to show up. This is what will happen if you don't call us if you need something.
Okay. Matt, then Judge.
Do we want to have a show of hands from the committee about the committee's in favor of Judge Bonas? Is what he stated is.
I think so.
Okay. Call the question. Here's some county board members there. But that's enough discussion, right?
And also, when you were talking about tabling something, I think from a parliamentary standpoint, if you table discussion, then that means it can be on the table forever, and that's the person who made the motion to table it brings it off. So we don't want to do that.
Okay, right. So we want to, how do you say, defer it? I mean, do we, what's the proper language?
Well, maybe Matt's just wanting a sense of the
No, we're talking about Barbara's proposal about just having the three questions. And I asked her to table that. Patricia's saying no table.
Well, but that's all. That's
brought all them all together.
Because it never got a second. So we're
fine.
Okay. But I'm just saying
that
teachers
that
do
then,
not.
Don't
not
say
that.
Table. I remember table.
That's a simple point of just simple information. Mm-hmm. Judge, the original questionnaire that you sent to us showed the qualifications, these three only.
Right.
And in your very nice letter, it states the qualifications are being 18, being a U.S. citizen, and being a Champaign County resident. Those are the three qualifications.
The three statutory legal qualifications, and in addition, the other question, the one that will have an effect that is automatic, is if you are a party to a lawsuit.
Okay.
Those are really the only four things that are automatic, will take you out of service, your ability to serve.
And then one other kind of whimsical or quizzical question about whether or not a person can read English. We would presume that if a person is not an English reader, then a friend or family member is assisting to answer that question.
That's possible, and then we could also, if we needed to, provide somebody to read the information to them, if there was written materials that were part of evidence, that sort of thing. Again, the person I don't believe actually sat on the jury, we had a visually impaired person who would need to have things described to them. And so I was there for part of that, but it never got to that part. But yeah, we would have to provide them a special accommodation.
But what about if you're illiterate?
We would read it to them.
Uh-huh.
That's what we're saying. We would, whatever it is, if it was this piece of paper, uh-huh, we would start by saying, okay, the top says Champaign County Circuit Court. And you know, I'd just read it to them if they could not read.
So, Matt, you're asking us to make them all, but I want to be clear about what we're, because you've said several different questions. Does anybody have exactly which questions we are omitting so that we know exactly?
You just went through a few minutes ago and said, why don't we skip it?
This, and I just want, that's why I want to make sure we know what this, and this is.
Okay, yeah.
I can make a motion.
No, but not yet. You're almost, when we figure it out, then we'll make
okay, a motion. Okay, I think what I've heard was that we, just based on the discussions, the questions that will be deleted from
the revised,
the
right,
revised
question,
now more modified version of this questionnaire is questions on your front on the first under section A. We're going to delete 7, 8, and 9.
Mm-hmm. Not 9.
No, we have to keep 9.
Have to keep 9.
Okay, 7 and 8. I'm sorry.
Don't we have to keep 7?
And
no,
no,
we're deleting 7 and 8.
We're going to delete 7 and 8. And then under section D, we are going to delete the number of children and just simply ask the question, do you have children, yes or no?
Yes.
We are going to add spouse to number 7,
mm-hmm,
spouse slash partner or partner slash spouse, however.
We delete number 4.
And
marital.
Yeah, we're deleting the marital status. And we're going to delete 8, mm-hmm, and 9.
Not 9.
No, not 9. Just 8.
I mean, yeah, it's just 8.
Right.
That's all I have.
Okay.
8.
Right. I will move that, that we go forward with that.
I have a question.
Judge, would that imply then that when they come in on Monday morning, they fill something out with their criminal background? Or would the court ask about the criminal background? Or would it just be up to the lawyers to ask about it?
Leave it up to the lawyers.
Yes, if they have been
convicted. Sounds like they already printed out anyway, right?
Well, the state has the power to run the background.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So, that's a motion with a second, right?
No, it is not second yet.
Right. I'll second it, and then I have a question.
Okay, motion is second by Ms. Putman. But
who made the motion?
I did.
Roger.
Okay.
Question.
Yes, ma'am.
That's brilliant. Thank you. I'm really pleased with this. In addition to what Mr. Holland and Judge Stefanis has proposed, after the 3 absolute qualifying questions, could there be another bold head or bar, something, screened or shaded bar, something to indicate that the questions that follow after 3 are not strictly qualifications? But we could use the, we could call it bioinformation again. Or just something, or we could, something to indicate that these are other than the strict qualifications. And we can also address that in the narrative letter that Judge Stefanis sends.
And I think Bill also suggested that you start to number them again, but I guess that's maybe implied through what you're asking with the bar or with some sort of delineation. Judge, then Matt.
2 things. I'd like to be able to reproduce what we've agreed to for the next meeting.
Mm-hmm.
The follow-up letter, if we send out the revised questionnaire and then we follow it up with a letter, I think we're going to have a difficult time trying to figure out, was it the revised questionnaire that got better results?
Mm-hmm.
Or was it the follow-up letter? So my suggestion is,
mm-hmm,
let's present this at the next meeting as we've agreed that it's supposed to, what we're supposed to have, and then send it out for 3 months, 6 months, whatever period of time is appropriate, that you think is appropriate, but no follow-up letter.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's that. And then maybe we try it with a follow-up letter
after that.
And then maybe we go to a once, you know, again, we just have to keep trying.
Well, and I think that the additions that we're making are not just aimed at producing more responses, but I think they are good additions. They're good changes, period. So even if we don't get a major response increase after these changes, I still think they are good changes, and then we can go with the follow-up letter. And I had a bunch of hands are shooting up. Matt, then Barbara, then I think Randy has something.
Okay. Something Mr. Jenny was saying about isolating the first three and then whatever. Based on what Roger just said, should we do questions 1, 2, 3 and then 9 together?
Yes.
And then have the separate.
Yes. Right.
Okay. That's good.
And then we'd renumber 9 as 4.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
That was the point I was going to make.
Okay.
But I wanted to make another one. So I think that this is a great idea. And if we don't get better results, then what you said, and I agree, is that we need to continue to find something that does. And that's where we need to go back to what Ms. Hannaford said and see if we can go to a single summons and then a follow-up letter from that and then ask people questions or whatever. You know, we need to keep trying.
Mm-hmm.
Even though you might like the questions, but it's like we've got to keep doing something to get more responses.
That's so I think the overall approach, I wouldn't say consensus, right, is that new proposed questionnaire, 6 months. We haven't ironed out that the number of times and how long. But if we said, you know, 6 months, and then we tested that and saw what the response was. And then 6 months of follow-up letters. And if that doesn't produce a whole bunch, then we're talking about, okay, we scrap that whole piece and we start
something like
again.
That.
I think that's what we're talking about. I think it was Randy. And then Bill, did you have your hand up? I didn't know. Okay.
Two quick comments. Yeah, I have the first couple of questions as qualifications, but instead of doing another heading there, why don't we just do number 4, 5, 6, and whatever, and just put it on the back under D, biographical. And because it's got the words up here that this would be provided as course.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
The second comment is I'm a little concerned about putting the are you a party to a lawsuit under qualifications if that means that when the jury commission gets it, they're going to knock them out. Because they may be a party to a lawsuit now, but by the time they get a summons in 2 years, they no longer are. So if the jury commission doesn't automatically disqualify them, I'm okay putting it under the A. But if it would automatically disqualify them, I think it should remain as part of the biographical thing.
I think the only thing that disqualifies them is the top three. They're automatically disqualified in the system.
As long as the commission knows that, then I'm okay with that.
Well, if it's a computer system that would indicate they're not eligible right off the bat with those three.
They come through. I've seen them check the box that they are a party to a lawsuit. Randy, you've seen that. We see that on the questionnaires. They come through. They're sitting in the jury box. Are they a party to a lawsuit?
Yes.
Okay, you're excused. So I don't think it automatically disqualifies them.
Okay. Theo?
On that same question, if it's going to excuse them, can we just get rid of the plaintiff and defendant question?
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. We took a lot of this information off of another county. I believe it was Peoria County. Or Simon, I'm not sure which, but one of those two. And that's kind of how they had it formatted, so that's where we went.
Okay, I'm a little confused about this. So, Bill, you're saying as a plaintiff or as a defendant, the question stays, but those particular comments come off?
Yeah, because
yes, no.
Right.
Yes, no.
Yes, okay, all right. Brian.
I want to say one thing that was stricken from the revised version, and I think is really good language, is this statement at the current, with the current questionnaire. Trial by jury is a fundamental principle of system of justice, jury service, therefore opportunity obligation American citizens. So this nice statement about citizenship, I think is good to keep at least on the revised version.
I believe it was taken off because, as I kind of mentioned the last time, modifying this form is not as simple as going into Microsoft Word and doing it. It's kind of an archaic way of going about it. And I'm sure that space was an issue when we had all those questions on the left-hand side of the revise. Mm-hmm. There probably wasn't enough room. If we move those other ones to the back, I'm guessing we can put that back.
But also this lovely, I shouldn't say lovely, it's the gold standard, that sentiment, that is in Judge Stefanis' letter.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it can't be said too often.
Right.
But were possible to paste it in there, it would be great. Mm-hmm.
Okay. The other thing I wanted to say is that I would like us to set as a benchmark the 1 year, because as I understand this advisory committee is only for 1 year, unless it's renewed by the county board. But I would like us to have some reality check 1 year out before we close. You know, if we extend things 6 months, that's mm-hmm. going to put us after right. our term. Mm-hmm. So I think it would be good to have some check. And even if we could have the numbers even a month early, Bill would have the time to crunch some of them. Or we have at least time to look at them and digest them.
You've been delegated, Bill.
I think that's a good point. So we need to clarify, is 3 months enough time to get to see some marks change?
Well, we're going to get, what, how many do we get back in the course of 3 months? A thousand, a couple thousand?
We send out 400 a week. So, but the ones we actually get back are obviously less than that, but we send out, I believe it's about 400 a week, so you're looking at 1,600 a month.
Well, then I think 3 months might give us an idea of what...
Yeah.
He was on your hand. I didn't want to spank your hand.
I pay real money.
Okay, we haven't even decided what period of time we're going to go with this. 3 months would be what, 4,800 questionnaires?
Yes, it's 4,800.
I mean,
that's enough.
You think that would be
sure?
All right, then let's go. Let's take it for 3 months with no follow-up letter. If we don't see any appreciable change, we'll get back together again. We'll just—I mean, not back together again, but again, at one of the meetings, we'll decide. Okay, what's next? Mm-hmm. You want to do a follow-up letter? But I think I was very much surprised by Ms. Hannaford's suggestion that the one-tier system is more efficient, and we may be back to that.
Of course, it's only more efficient if you have a follow-up letter, apparently.
Yes.
Well, but the thing is that for a summons, it's not the same as just doing a follow-up letter because you're getting a summons.
Well, we're ahead of ourselves.
Yeah, we are.
Okay. It's got to come out?
Yeah. No, not really. Okay. I mean, I just wanted to kind of know when we can expect that our clock will start in 3 months.
Well, we'll get you the modified, revised, whatever you want to call it, for the next meeting. We'll all agree that that's the way it should be, and then we can get it shipped out as soon as put it into production as soon as possible.
So it takes about, if we all agree, everything is in place September 25th, then it goes into circulation when?
That I don't know. I'll have to, like I said, these things have to be tied to the data in the computer. It's not just sending out the form, the piece of paper.
But you will notify us of when it actually gets
certainly
served.
Will do that.
Okay. And trying to keep this agenda moving, it was pretty broad. I knew it was ambitious when I put it together. But I'm very concerned and really wanting Bill to have the opportunity to really share his information without being rushed and stuff like that. But again, that doesn't seem to not going to take place today. So, Bill, we're going to ask you again to hold off and possibly even next time have an opportunity for you to really clarify some of the information that you share with us, because I thought it was very valuable. So if we can agree to defer number 7 to next meeting.
No, we
did not. Thank you, man. You're doing such a good job sharing this meeting, man. So a motion to accept the... I don't know if we do. Yeah, we do. We have a motion to accept the revisions in
modifications. It's been seconded, so we're just up to a vote.
So the motion was from you. It has not been seconded. The motion has been seconded.
Right.
So we're voting. I'm catching up, Matt. Voting on all in favor of the revised edition, modified edition of the questionnaire. Say aye.
Aye.
All opposed. Ayes have it. Okay. Now I'm asking for a motion to defer number 7 on the agenda to the next meeting, Bill Brown's presentation and some discussion about his presentation and summary.
So moved.
So moved by Ms. Avery.
Second.
Second by Mr. Gladdy. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Ayes have it. Old business. Follow up on Neil Partham's letter. I think Matt was working on it and the judge.
I handed it off to Roger.
You handed it off to Roger.
You did.
He fumbled.
I wouldn't do that. No fumbling. I sent Mr. Parkin a letter, and I'm sorry I didn't keep a copy of the original. I gave it to our jury staff to make sure they got delivered. I apologize for the delay in getting back to due to my surgery and some email problems. I explained to Mr. Parkin that the reason part of the problem was that he was summoned for a special jury, not one of our normal juries for 1 week. He was actually summoned for a 2-week jury. And what happened in his particular case about the parking is that the judge in that particular case called the jurors to come in at a time not normally used. In other words, the parking pass is set up for a standard jury. And our jury personnel did not modify the parking pass when it went to him. So I apologize to him for the oversight. With regard to him being paid, which I guess was the other issue, I explained to him that our computer system, the way that we track our expenses is that the juror badges, when they have a badge, they are scanned when they come in. If they don't appear, then we have no way of knowing, and if their badges aren't scanned, that's the only way our computer system pays for folks. So again, I explained to him that I understood his confusion. I apologize again for the inconvenience. I sent this out on my letterhead and explained to him that if he had any, I told him to feel free to contact me if he had any additional problems or concerns. And on behalf of the circuit court, I apologize for his difficulties. I have not heard back from him. But I sent that out the day after we met and I got the information from Matt. So unless somebody else has heard from him, I have not. And if I do hear something, I'll let everybody know.
I'm sorry, Jenny.
Mr. Brown first asked, and I associate myself with his request, that if at all possible, Mr. Parkin's name could be returned to the jury pool.
Okay. I was probably absent from that particular meeting, or I didn't hear it, and I apologize if I didn't. I'll do what I can to get his name added back.
That would be great.
Maybe that he gets sent another questionnaire or what have you.
I think that would be very gratifying to him.
Okay.
Although, I just sense that. I have not spoken with him, but...
Okay.
I think that would be like making him whole.
I will do what I can.
Patricia?
Well, I just wanted to say thank you for doing that. I know he appreciated getting a letter directly from you, Roger, so we appreciate that. I only wish you had it said on behalf of the jury selection committee and the...
Oh, I'm sorry. I should have.
You're absolutely right. Everybody deserves credit for that.
But thank you.
That's not a problem. I'm sorry that he had to go through so much difficulty.
Yeah, we appreciate that.
Can there be a quick interpretation of the statute, the 705 ILCS 305/1?
If you look at that, okay, where is it?
It's right next to the left page. There we go.
If you look at that, the information that generates people to get on a jury, Illinois driver's license, Illinois identification card, Illinois disabled persons identification card, and of course voter registration. And this is all information that the Secretary of State has and readily available. I don't know, and I shared in this conference I was at with Wednesday and Thursday, there aren't any other counties, I don't believe, that use other forms of information. I don't know how we would get it. I don't know if Department of Public Health, the Department of Public Aid, or any of these departments would provide us with that information. And then if they did, how would we put it in a form that we could use? Right now we get a disk from the Secretary of State, and that disk utilizes these four means of identification. As an aside, getting back to our questionnaire, it's apparent in talking, and again, I bring some of these issues up to these judges that we discuss, every county has a different questionnaire, different form of a questionnaire. Why don't we have a uniform questionnaire for the state of Illinois? Mm-hmm. which is something I'm going to try to figure out. But anyway, Roger, any...
Well, and I got this, and I will quote my source, as painful as it is to quote Randy Rosenbaum or anything. I believe that Randy's interpretation is exactly right. What the first sentence there is, and the question, I believe the issue about what you want to interpret it is, the language sedates. The county board of each county, except those counties which have a jury administrator or jury commissioners as provided in the Jury Commission Act, shall use those things. Okay? So the question is, because we have a jury commission, can we get away from that? I believe that what they're really referring to there is, when you have a jury commission, as we do, then it is their responsibility to get this information, as opposed to the county board. Mm-hmm. So it's not really allowing us to opt out and go out and get other information from wherever. It simply means that when you have a jury commission, as we do, and a jury administrator or jury clerks, as we do, it is their responsibility to get the list, prepare the list, and that sort of thing. So it's not an out for going outside of what is listed in here. It's simply who's actually responsible for doing it. And that was Randy's idea. It is a good one.
Randy?
Yeah. I think those are the four qualifying factors. And I think if you really want to expand it to people who have valid college IDs or whatever you want to do, I think it has to go to the General Assembly to add different forms of things, and then they get thrown into the wheel with the Secretary of State. So if that's something we want to talk about, other forms of identification that might be appropriate, we can come up with ideas, but then I think we have to pass along to Mike Burricks or Naomi Jacobson.
But as you recall, it used to be just registered voters. Mm-hmm. And we've come a long way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's been within the past 15 years that we've gone to driver's license, mm-hmm. Illinois ID cards, and other things.
So the interpretation that we've been given here, though, that is indeed an interpretation. Would, if we had Naomi or Mike come in, or anyone who serves in that capacity, do we feel like we would have a more precise interpretation of that, or would it just make it even more?
I don't think the interpretation is going to change. You might be able to persuade them that the law needs to be changed,
yeah,
to expand, and that's all fine. I mean, and I think having them here, you know, that's all fine too. But I don't think the interpretation is going to change. It's the jury commission's responsibility, and that's what the legislature was trying to do when they parsed that out.
Well, I think what we should do from here, this is something I'm very interested in, and I was impressed when Barracks and Jacobson achieved a change in how first-time voters will, in February of 2010, show up at the polling place and what they can show to be able to vote. I think that Frericks and Jacobson, and maybe other people, have shown that they know how to change the laws, that maybe I would ask other people on this committee who are so interested to become, for me, first become an expert as much as is possible in that aspect of the statutes, and ask for an appointment with them in their office, and rather than bringing them here, the people who are interested in whether or not they might want to sponsor something like that, go to them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Matt, did
well, no, just sponsor go first, because, yeah.
Okay, all right, go ahead, Jim.
On what Jenny said, would it not be appropriate for the chair to possibly send out some letters to some of our senators and representatives to maybe explain what it is we're trying to do, and see what, I mean, at least see if they have some interest in discussing it with us,
mm-hmm.
or with mm-hmm. with chair and whoever else.
Excellent
idea.
Yes, I agree. Matt,
while we're talking about the chair, can the chair get a report to?
Yes, Matt. I got you, man.
The thing is, I don't want to hurt us along too quickly here, but next item up is new business. Mm-hmm. I wonder if I could add something real quick to new business. Is that okay with the committee?
You might start losing people in about 3 minutes.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I wanted to bring this up real quick. I don't. Okay.
Okay.
So this week I talked to Jane Quinlan, who's the administrator for the Regional Office of Education. So I'm trying to look at our education angle, our school outreach. Mm-hmm. And I talked with her, and she was saying how on the 30th of this month there's going to be a workshop, like school librarians, where they're going to get materials on the history of the courthouse, on the clock tower, and also about the Lincoln exhibit. I was thinking about trying to tie
jury service into that as well. Since, you know, all this takes place at the courthouse.
Yeah.
The problem I'm seeing is, you know, we're running out of time tonight. She would need materials about jury service by the 25th. So the other option, if we can't get materials about jury service, because the thing is these librarians are going to get these materials and they're going to take them back to the schools and then show them to teachers, and then that way, you know, that can be disseminated in the classrooms if we so choose. She also said, if we can't, I'm going to get back in touch with her early next week about what we talked about, what we decided to do tonight, if we decide anything. She said, if we can't get stuff to her by the 25th of this month, she does meet with school superintendents 5 times a year. Mm-hmm. And that if this is going to be too rushed to do by the end of this month, maybe we could get materials up and ready for the next time she meets the superintendents, and then we could do it that way. So what does the committee think about that?
How many librarians does she anticipate having?
That I do not know.
I believe it's about 30 or 40. Barb Wysocki contacted me about using the area outside of jury assembly from 2 to 4 on that day, which I indicated to her last night when I spoke to her, is potentially a problem in and of itself because we could have jurors wandering out of there in the middle of two jury terms.
That disc that Judge Lab put together, how long does that last? 15 minutes?
Tops.
10 minutes?
15 minutes tops.
I mean, if we can't put anything else together, could we at least let them see that, and if they think that might be appropriate? The disc that Judge Ladd, we show the jurors as they come in, Judge Ladd, we play that disc, and it's about 10 or so minutes of what it is you can expect being on a jury.
Can that be coming
to the library? I don't see why not.
We'll see how...
That's why I asked how many there are going to be. I mean, let them look at it. If they think it might be appropriate...
That would be good.
I don't know.
We'll see if we can get it done. It may be tough to get that many copies done in that short period of time, but I can try.
I don't know if the Chicago Law Association has them, but I think the Supreme Court on its website has a juror guide.
Yes,
it's something that's printable or if it's something you'd have to order, but you might want to just go to the Illinois Supreme Court website and on the side it has a list of them.
And I believe that I think that we actually have some of those that we photocopy and give to jurors when they do their jury service. I can check on that to see if we have them, because we order stuff from them routinely.
So would these be something that we would have on hand the day that they get there, or is this something we could get to her, like she said, by the 25th? She said we could either send these things to her or have them here at Brookings and she could pick them up. So...
talk to me next week, send me an email. Okay. If we get an email to each other, which I know has been a problem for us, if we get an email to each other, let me check on that next week and I'll let you know exactly what I can come up with.
Okay.
I really do have to go, but I have one quick thing, which is I spoke to, on behalf of the committee and Judge Jafana, spoke to the Champaign County Bar Association, and they've agreed to give us $500 of the initial money for our... outreach for the radio. So,
wow. So that's added to the 9.
No, I'm coming up with the extra 100.
Oh, right. So
we'll have $900 to start with.
Right.
But they're going to come up with the 500.
Correct.
Yeah.
And all we need to do is, and as soon as we figure out exactly the outlet and when we're going to do all of this, we can let them know and they'll send a check to the radio station. And before I forget, you know, timing that is also going to be important, because if we do that at the same time that we do the changed format or whatever of the thing, that may also skew, you know, so making sure that we can keep them distinct and report on that is important. And they asked...
Wow, I thought I'd do a blitz to help get the response.
And they asked me to let them know about the follow-up. In other words, you know... What did the money that they provide, was it successful? What would we do with it? And that sort of thing. And that may be something where we want members of the committee to go to their meetings. They meet once a month to do that. And that's something we can do further on down the road.
Okay. The new business was basically about a working group for public service announcements. And I think we need to spend some time on it. We're not going to be able to do that now. So
I apologize. I forgot everything.
Okay, that's why you come late, leave early. I understand. So we're going to defer that also.
Yeah, because under public announcements, public announcements that you're talking about, the one thing that I would like to do at some point in time, and maybe at our next meeting, was when we get ready to do our public service announcements about your, you know, whatever that's going to look like here, doing your civic duty by responding to the questionnaire, or however the public service is going to look like. I would like to include in our outreach efforts this committee taking the advantage of maybe reaching out personally to groups that might be able to help carry our message out mm-hmm. to the larger masses. I think talking to the Ministerial Alliance, or actually getting a group of pastors in a room, because they can then incorporate that, or we can have it as a part of a bulletin on Sunday, and just encouraging the congregation about their responsibilities to serve as jurors. And so I'd like to do all of that kind of in a timely manner, because we want to keep track of everything that we are attempting to do as this committee to increase those responses. And so we're trying to keep, I guess, things separate so that we could see what actually did work. But, you know, I think some can go concurrent. Is it concurrent?
The comment about this committee is only going to last for a year, I never gave that any thought. I mean, I just assumed we would keep doing this until
we
figured out it's either going to work or it's not.
Okay.
And I didn't think a year.
I think
would
it's 2 years. I thought about
I don't think a year's enough time. So
no.
That's
okay.
And so I, you know, obviously we're doing things, we're getting some things done, and if we can get this questionnaire agreed to on the 25th, I'd like to start October 1 if mm-hmm. we can get it geared up to, you know, just have an easy starting point. But
yeah, anyway, so. I say our target would be October 1.
Target October 1.
Okay.
Ms. Miller?
I have to leave now, and I'd like to give you all copies of our Who's the Legal Women Voters.
Okay. We'd love to have that. And actually, the next meeting is scheduled for September 25th. We already have it booked up. There's no public participation. This meeting, if there are no further questions, all hearts and minds are clear. This meeting is adjourned.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Meeting is adjourned at 7:05 p.m.
Thank you, John.
Thank you. Thank you.